All right. Well, how's everyone doing this morning? Doing good? We just had World Mandate last weekend. We're still living on some of the fuel on that amazing, powerful weekend. And also, we got to watch over and over again the bad lip reading. So that was fun as our whole church made fun of their pastor. And that was fun. My kids got kicked out. We kept watching over and over. They're like, Daddy, yours is the best. Yours one's the best. And, you know, just recently we had a, I don't go on Facebook too often, but Facebook has, you know, in the beginning, you know, when you first log on, they have a reminder of, you know, 5 years ago or 4 years ago. So 4 years ago, I was taking a team to World Mandate, about 30 of them. When we used to have to bring people to Texas in order to see World Mandate because we didn't have the satellite locations. And as I was, you know, reading this excuse me, I don't know, we have feedback. I will use the microphone back there. So anyways, it's kind of like an inside joke with those guys. So they're like, I'm going to use the microphone if it doesn't work well. So anyways, I was reading this little blurb, and it was a conversation between me and Caleb. And one of the things that I said, I was freaking out because the car rental price, we were flying to Austin, 2 hour drive to Waco, and we had to get a lot of cars to take 30 people to get to Waco, and the prices were going up. And I'm like, and I say it to, I remember this, I said to Nicole, I was like, what do we do about the car rental? And Caleb, being 7 years old, kind of a know-it-all 7 year old, and the background said, well, why don't you wait on the Lord? And so we're waiting on the Lord. So God came through, and thank you, Caleb. And he's still the same now in a lot of ways. And so as I was waiting on the Lord this morning, felt like the Lord was saying that darkness is losing its power in our day. And right now in our city and in the nations and Sweden, darkness is beginning to lose its power. And when our eyes are on Jesus, the darkness doesn't have a chance. And, you know, as we said, Aslan is on the move. God is a reference to Chronicles of Narnia in the first one. But really what he's ultimately saying is God is on the move. And things are beginning to look more like springtime, where there's growth and the ice is beginning to melt. Not only just in our individual lives, but corporately, we can see that happening. And it was fun. If you're in the prayer room this morning, we had a lot of fun back there. It was rowdy. It was loud. And we went for it. We sang this is how we fight our battles. And we remind ourselves that whatever happens in the prayer closet eventually becomes public. And it flows out of that place, out of the secret place. And when it flows out, everybody gets blessed. See, when we get out of the way, God's power can flow through us and actually get to the individual in our church. And we want to get out of the way with something we say to the worship team or myself or anybody that has a role to play, not just Sundays, but every day, that when we get into the, I started off in the prayer room, one of the things we said was that a lot of times when life is rough and where we're going through trials and whatnot, we've had a couple of rough weeks. We're trying to, in finding a house, we realize the housing market's crazy, whether it's finance problem or whether it's trying to find something. We've been in this battle for a long time, not just the housing, but also just day-to-day ministry. And so as we are, you know, talking about, you know, all the crazy trials and tribulations we go to, we have a choice in the moment. We either out of performance try to make something happen, or in surrender, we just surrender to God and he moves. He has a chance to move. It's almost like, look at it this way, is if God comes to his workbench every day and is the clay moldable. See, if we come to the workbench every day and say, God, work on us, we're the moldable clay, we're wet, we're moldable, he can use us. When we admit that we have the problem, or corporately we have the problem, and then God could come and say, finally, you're admitting it, you're humbling yourselves, and I will heal you and your land. And so as we come to the table again, even this morning, we're saying, God, work on us, use us. Another hilarious moment at our house is when I came in. It was one of those days. It was like 2 weeks ago. I came in. I was like, man, you know, got stood up kind of in, you know, discipleship. That happens often. And, you know, just it just happens that way. And sometimes it's, you know, communication, whatever. And I come in, but it's just one of those weeks where everything just seemed to not go well. And I walked in, and I was telling Nicole a little bit, like, you know, what's going on. And out of, you know, in the background, the kids are memorizing James. And the first part of the James, I just hear my kids saying, "Consider it joy, my friends, when we all go through trials and tribulations." I wanted to kill him, you know, at that moment. But he was right. You know, it's almost like kids submit, or parents submit to their kids. It's the other way around. But I felt like I needed to just drop to my knees in that moment and just say, "God, all right, I surrender again." And, you know, this is a surrendering season. God has been calling us to surrender, because it's not just that when we surrender, we get what we want. It's not that we surrender and, wow, we get a name for ourselves, we get a better job or whatever. He gets more of us when we surrender. And when he gets more of us, or we get more of him, everything works well and people around us are blessed, right? So this morning's message is run to the battle. Not that you need another message about calling people to run to the battle like it's another world mandate, but that's who we are as a people. And as we walk through this, you'll understand why it is unique, even to, not only just to us, but globally to the church, which we are called to run to the battle. So let's look at Psalm 78, 4-7. I'm just going to read a little bit here, and then I have three things, basically, that I want to communicate this morning. All right, number one, or verse four, "We will not conceal them from their children, but tell them to generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wondrous works that he has done. For he has established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers, that they should teach them to their children, that the generation to come might know, even the children yet to be born, that they may arise and tell them to their children, that they should put their confidence in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments." Isn't that good? We are called to reach the generations. And so I just want to simply give you three different points this morning. We'll kind of break it down a little bit and then we'll close. But number one is that he has given us a testimony. That all of us here, that if we've given our lives to Jesus, he's given us a testimony. And, you know, I remember as I was thinking back to one of the things I love about Cole is that anytime he talks about his testimony, he cries. But I love that about him, and others too. But, you know, one of the things, because he realizes what he came from. And, you know, when we realize that we have a before and an after, there's in that disparity, even if the wider it is, sometimes the more thankful we are. And the disparity is wide, I know, in even my own life. As a freshman in college, you know, I came in as an 18-year-old who had just recently got on the heels of having an abortion, having a crazy life, and I had to get a restraining order against this girlfriend who followed me to college. The Lord instantly spoke in that moment, like, "God, you're saving me. You're doing something in my life, and why is this happening?" And he says, "You know, I will say this, that I will save you, but also I want you to know that your sins will find you out. They follow you. They just have a way of following you throughout life." Does it feel like that? But God doesn't only just want to save us, he wants to free us. And he was even in that moment beginning to, in my freshman year of college, beginning to free me of the things of the past. See, when you, before Jesus, you got all this stuff going on, and then you go through the cross, and sometimes all the powers of the enemy in your life are disarmed, it says in Colossians 2, 14 and 15. They're ultimately disarmed, meaning that there is a chance and a possibility to be free. You see that if you have a choice, though, to drag it across the threshold of the cross. You see that what happens is in that moment, my whole life changed. I went from death to life, but I brought some stuff over that God ultimately wanted to bind up my broken heart, and he wanted to free me from the captors. And as I was reviewing my testimony, God said that, and there's so much more I could do, of course, but just as a confirmation, as a father talking to his son, he said, "Well done. At this point on, right now, in this point in your history, you have stewarded your testimony well." Aren't we all called to steward our testimony? The second thing he gives us is a law. He's given us a law. He's given us a way to live in family. Another way to say is he's given us relational resolves. He's given us a way to live. And so one of the things we say, and I don't know if you have the five here, but I'll just list them off, that God's given us a way. In other words, when you go to different churches, they may have the same banner to make him known, and or to know him, make him known, et cetera, et cetera. like we want to reach people, all that. But there's a way in which we live. And God, when we were planning this church, Nicole and I, we just said, hey, how do you want us to live? So you've given us all a testimony, and you want us to steward that testimony well. But how do you want us to live? See, God doesn't just save your life, but he also gives you a way to live. And the way to live is through grace. And one of the grace, hunger, humility, honor, and joy. That's our relationship. Many of you guys know them, but I just want to break it down just a little bit. It's not necessarily the point of the message, but I just want to remind us who we are as a people. You know, we have it on our, we have maps in our house that kind of represent my thinking. And then we also have whiteboards in our house that represents Nicole's thinking in almost every room of the house. Whether it's a chalkboard or a whiteboard or a map, that you walk in, you're like, what the heck is with this family? They have whiteboards and maps in their house. It's just the way her and I are so different. And anyways, on the whiteboard, we write out our family resolve. Excuse me. We want to live that because God said, if you steward your family well, you'll steward the household of God. And one of the things we write on there is to say, we want to be a people of grace. You know, when one of the kids, we have some kids have high justice meters. Y'all have high justice meters? You know what that is? It's when somebody sees something wrong and he'll let everybody know about it. That times that's the oldest one. Judah, we don't have a worry care in the world, but Caleb's like, we got to do everything right just the way it is. You know, and so he brings conviction in the house, sometimes condemnation. But he needs to learn that we want to be a people who who give grace. And grace is when we cover each other's sins. Grace is love covers a multitude of sins. We're not here to point them out. Where the Holy Spirit will point them out in order to correct us, not condemn us. And so what the Holy Spirit wants to do in our lives is he wants us to be a people who cover one another's sins. We're not avoiding them. We're not pretending they're not there, but we do cover them. Ultimately, whatever we cover, God uncovers. And when we uncover our sin in front of many, he will cover them. And that's called his grace. And not only that, but then he's also empowering us. He doesn't just pick us out of the pit, so to speak, but he thrusts us forward, right? I mean, that's what grace is. Ultimately, when somebody shows you grace, you feel something. You feel like, wow, I feel forgiven. I feel loved. I feel secure, but I also feel empowered to do everything that God's called me to do. Number two is that we are a people of great hunger. Inside this building, this is not the church. This is not called church. We are the people, the church. You already know that. But what I was just going to say this, that whether we're eating ice cream together, or doing life group, or overseas, wherever we are, our hunger, our cry of our hearts when we get up in the morning is, God, I want to know you. I really want to know you. And there's a people that want to know you. And it's fun to be in the house of God. Why? Because when everybody's saying, I want to know you, it gets electric. It's fun. It's exciting. There's life, right? How many of us have been in a place where it's like, man, there's like this little, 10%, that love God. It's like, oh, I wish I could be those guys. Well, you can. Just say it. Like I said, I want to know you, God. I want to know you like those guys. Whatever you did in them, you'll do in me because God plays no favorites. He doesn't play like Kristen Appa's word. That's right on. Stop trying to fill somebody else's role. Hey, if you want hunger, he'll give it to you. That's what I know about our God. Number three is that humility. We need to look at others' interests, not just our own. It's the interest of others. Sometimes in certain times, like, man, I just want to get around others because I love their testimony. I love their life. I'm interested in their business. I'm interested in their world. And in fact, when sometimes I hear, people speak about something, I'm like, man, I need this, but so does so many other people because I know it'll help them. That's humility. When we look outside of ourselves and say, man, I've got to get this message or I got to get this money or I got to get this to the other person to help them so they will succeed. Can I just say, when you refresh others, you yourselves will be refreshed. You'll never lose. You cannot give God. That's who you are. Number four, that we are a people of honor. We want to honor one another. We want to call out the gold, the best. We don't want to condemn. You know, if you call yourself a leader and you don't have humility and honor, you're not one. Because you know what? Here's the deal about leadership is you want others to succeed more than yourself. That's why people lay their lives down in Afghanistan, Iran, all the different places in the world. Why? Not for themselves. They know they won't make it. They literally, their imaginary suitcases become coffins as they go overseas and they say, God, have it all. That's great humility. People that run to the battle have humility because they realize it's not their battle, it's his. See, when you're trying to run and defeat the giants for your own good and your own battle, you'll lose. Because it says this in the Bible, that pride ultimately is to your demise. It's a trap. It's a fall. You're going to fall. But when you humble yourself, God will raise you up. And so when we are people of honor, we're saying, man, you have a gift. You have a pastoral gift. You got to get around people. You got an evangelistic gift. Get out of the house, man. Go find some people. Right? We're noticing the gifting in them. And you know, it needs to be activated. If they just know it themselves, they'll deal with all insecurity, right? That's what we deal with on a daily basis. You may have this amazing gift, but until a leader activates it through honor and security, you'll never actually thrive and do the thing that God's called you to do. Number five, we're a people of joy. That's who we are. Joy is not dancing up and down, but it is a byproduct of joy. You know, it's sometimes what I've noticed about joy is it's the power to obey, but it's also the fruit of obedience. It's both. It's a power, right? I mean, it's the joy of the Lord is our strength. I can actually endure all trials and consider it joy because that's my power to get through the trial. And you know what? When you actually get through it, guess what? You get a double portion, right? You get the joy to go through the trial, and on the back end, you get joy, and you're like, man, this is great. How can I lose? We need to look at trials that way. We need to look at the battle that way. And so, but I also have the third thing to say, and then I have a warning. God has given us a mandate, and God has given us a testimony to share, that we are called to disciple cities and nations. And can I just say that we are actually discipling nations right now? We're sending a team back to Colombia because people want us, they need us, they need what we have. But it's not a codependency. It's a place where we're saying, you know, they're saying, man, I love the nations too. The Colombians are like, I love Americans. And we say as Americans, we love Colombians. We're together on this thing. It's not some weird codependency deal. It's like we need them and they need us. We're family and we're discipling that nation. This is what God's called us to do, disciple nations. And we're doing it. We're doing it in Sweden. We've done it in Belgium and Paris. We've done it in Ecuador. We've done it in Mexico. We've done it around the world. And it's amazing. We are called to get this message out. And Joe Ewan, he said, one of the fathers of our movement, he said in the beginning of World Mandate during our prayer service before we launched into the weekend, he said, Orlando, he gave a word to every church. He said, Orlando, cast your nets wide. In other words, what we're called to do is, this is another form of surrender. You see, we are called to surrender to the battle, not in it. We are victorious when we get to the battle. We just need to surrender to get there. So when we surrender, ultimately what God's saying is when you get into the battle, this is our battle to reach people, to bring light, to bring life to people who don't have it. And, you know, when we don't live that way, there's a possibility for a lot of things to happen that could go wrong. Let me read this passage, what the Israelites did. In verse 9, it says, the sons of Ephraim were archers equipped with bows, yet they turned back in the day of battle. Let that not be said of Antioch Orlando. And can I just say this, that guys, when we see that God's given us a testimony, a way to live, and a mandate to share, When the gaps widen in all three of those things, here it says in verse 32, in spite of all this, they sinned and they did not believe in his wondrous works, verse 32. We fall apart. There's a way that apathy gets in. There's a way that sin begins to reign in our lives. Do you understand what I mean by gaps? It means that when you got saved, this is the most silly thing in the planet. When somebody actually gets saved, when someone gets radically born again, then all of a sudden they allow so much gap to happen between the life that God gave them and the life they need to live. I see it so often. To me, it doesn't actually make sense. It does in the Old Testament with the Israelites, but it doesn't even make a lick of sense in the New Testament. They gave their lives down. they laid them down. And you know that it's easy sometimes to listen to these big heroes, right, in the faith, where they get up and they say they lay their lives down. We're overseas, or we're preaching in front of millions of people. It's easy for them to say, hey, look, we laid our lives down. Lay all your life down. But you know what? Some people that actually work in the working world need to actually believe that if you lay your life down, it's just as good as the other guy that lays his life down in ministry. That all of us are meant to lay our lives down, right? It's for everybody. So if everybody in this room actually lays their life down, they'll become the army that God called us to be. It's not just the people that are just doing the 10, you know, staffers in Antioch or Orlando. I mean, come on. We're not interested in being only the 10 to 12% of the people that actually live this thing. It's everybody. Let's defy all the stats that say, you know, it's the 20% that lead the 80. Let's just lead the city. If we all are in it, we'll actually do some damage and take land, which Jesus said he's come to destroy the works of the devil. And so I want to look at 1 Samuel 17. God, as I was reading this passage about fighting battles, God brought me to a man who actually ran to the battle. It literally says in the black and white, it literally says he ran to the battle. But I want to move back here to let's start in verse 1. I'm going to skip around a little bit. For those linear people, you could read it at home, and it'll be just as linear as you want it. So now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle. In verse 2, Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up in the battle array to encounter the Philistines. The Philistines stood on the mountain on one side, and Israel stood on the mountain on the other. It was a classic battle with a valley in the middle. And they were scared. It says in verse 8, he stood, this is Goliath, he stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel. You know, our ceilings in our room, you know, as I'm tucking the boys into bed, and they're talking about the ceilings and stuff, and I don't forget what our conversation was, but I was like, they're 9-foot ceilings. And I said, that's the size of Goliath. He'd have to duck in our house. And we're looking up, and I happened to be on the bed. I looked up, I'm like, man, that thing is intimidating. And so he is 9 feet tall. That's crazy. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel and said to them, why do you come out to draw up in battle array? Am I not the Philistine and you servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. Sounds like Isaiah 55:5. We'll call a people you don't know, and those people we don't know will come running and obey. God's looking for people who know who God is. Strong, secure people who will actually preach the word of God in this hour. But I prevail against him and kill him, and then you shall be our servants. Oftentimes, that's what I wonder. I wonder if we're slaves to this land. And that's not what God called us to be. And then it says here in verse 14 that I just have to note here. I won't read the whole thing, but it just says, David was the youngest. He was the one that all of us wouldn't pick. And then it says here in my Bible, it says the little, title of it. It says, David accepts the challenge. It just drew me in to the story. I was like, come on, I want to accept this thing just as much as he did. So David arose early in the morning and left the flock with a keeper and took the supplies and went as Jesse commanded him. And he came to the circle of the camp while the army was going out in battle array, shouting a war cry. Israel and the Philistines drew up in battle array, army against army. Then David left his baggage in care of the baggage keeper and ran to the battle line and entered in order to greet his brothers. Now, we know earlier, if you know the story, he was a little intimidated. His brothers were not happy at all. As you read later in the story here, his brothers were not happy about him running to the battle. Can I just say that when you run to the battle, you'll have enemies. You will have people that say it is foolish, it is dumb, you'll waste your money, whatever it is, there will always be people, whether your bosses, your parents, your grandparents, whoever they are, there will be people in your life. When you run to the battle, because everybody here is called to the battle, when you run to it, there will be offense in them. And maybe perhaps if you take it in you. And so God has called us to be a people who run without all the other voices, and David had plenty of them. And I love what it says here in verse 23. This was his motivation ultimately. As he was talking with them, behold, the champion, the Philistine from Gath named Goliath, was coming up from the army of the Philistines, and he spoke these same words that he spoke earlier, the taunting, and David heard them. Do you know what I hear? I hear of people that are the most individualistic, the most secular in the world, and they're taunting us. They're taunting Sweden. You see, do we hear the voices of Goliath in Sweden? And do we take that voice and say, nuh-uh, we're running to the battle? You see, guys, ultimately, it's all of our battle. Because just a little soapbox moment. Here's the deal. I've said this earlier before. If you actually don't go with us to Colombia and South America, you'll never go with us anywhere else. And whether it's with Europe or anywhere else, because here's the deal. It's not your battle. It's our battle. Whether you feel called to pray, give, or go, it's not about, hey, controlling the deal and where we go. It's about hearing the voice of the Lord and all of us being a part of it. We're called to do it as a family. We're a family who seeks God together on mission. And we're all called to do it. And, you know, I wrote here, I said, why the whole church? Why are we all called to run to the battle? Why is it ours? Why, you know what? The same 120 that actually rocked the book of Acts and Acts 2, that rocked the nations, is the same 120 that's going to rock Sweden. It's the same 150, 180, whatever, that'll rock Orlando for Awaken. We're called to do it as family. And guess what, guys? We're better together than apart. We're always better together. And it's not about your deal. It's not about you getting your deal or your nation so that you could do it. Eventually, you know what? If you do it with us, you'll eventually, God will do it in and through you, and we'll gather around you and we'll go together. That's the heart of God. It's not about individualism. It's not about you getting your vision, you going and doing whatever you want. Because here's what I know about it, that just as we need help to fight this battle, you'll need help to fight yours. And you always, if we cut ourselves off from the plan and the vision of God, ultimately we'll cut ourselves off from the plan and vision through you. And we need each other. It's not about, look, I didn't wake up early on in October, November when we were thinking about Sweden. I didn't wake up and say, like, oh, I can't wait to go to Sweden. It became, the heartbeat became stronger, and I could hear it even stronger as I obeyed God in the mission to Sweden. And that's always what he does, doesn't he? Isn't it great when we go and we come back, we're like, man, can you imagine if I didn't go? I mean, that feeling. Look, this is not a message to twist an arm. This is a run to the battle of God, to this city of Orlando, and also to the nations of the earth. Just this year, we're going to Sweden. Of course, you know that. But not only that, but it's going to take a lot of work. Within the battle, it's easy to call everybody, but it's hard to get there. And now we're realizing the process and the money and the raise. I called like 10 people the other day just saying, God, I have to submit to people who have done this before. One of the calls was from Waco, from this guy who had spent his life in the Middle East and saw a move of God happen. And he was like, hey, what's going on in Orlando? I've heard this buzz that you're taking 120 people to Sweden. That's insane. That's crazy. Tell me about it. He's like, I got to get down there. And I realized that's great and everything, but I rather celebrate after the fact. Yeah. And it's going to take a lot of work to get there. But it's all hands on deck. It's all running to the battle. And we're going to close. I mean, it's going to be a short deal here. I just have basically the ministry time. God said, I want you to look at verse 22 again. And I'll tie in a dream that I have, and then we'll land this. So in verse 22, it says, David left his baggage in care of the baggage keeper to run to the battle. And ultimately then, When David said a little bit later, he said that when Saul was kind of making fun of him and said, here's your armor, it almost kind of goes with, it said it didn't fit. It almost felt like Kristen Appa's word to all of us. That sometimes, you know, even though we're called to the battle, we're not called to wear somebody else's armor. We're not called to live, you know, to do what necessarily, hey, that seems attractive. I wish I could do that. Or I wish I had the prophetic. I wish I had the evangelist. We're all called to be one church. We're one body given. Everyone's been given an amazing gift to use. And then he goes on to say that it's not just the armor, but also David had another test. David had multiple tests throughout his life. And the test, Saul said, well, who are you, man? You're the youngest. You're from this family, and you're not really all that important. And how are you going to defeat this giant? He said, look, I'll tell you something, Saul, that I actually fought when no one else knew I was fighting. I used my testimony and I ran to the battle. And now this battle has my name on it. Because I did what was done in secret is now become public. And see, that's what we've all been called to do, right? It's this testimony that we've been, that David stewarded. It was a testimony that was done in secret. He was fighting the bear and the lion, and he realized, man, if I can fight these beasts of the field that everybody else is afraid of, and I was protecting sheep that had no name, that I can actually protect people that have a name. And so as he ran to the battle, he was confident because he had something in God that his brothers never had. That Saul, he knew Saul didn't. I mean, he honored him, but he knew Saul was a scaredy cat in the tent. But David ran into the battle because he was one who actually stewarded the testimony that was in him. And so what I love about this phrase is that when he left his baggage, what is our baggage that we need to leave in order for us to run into the battle? And I've written a couple things down that I know that will be like arrows to the heart. And we need to deal with these things in order we need to do business with the Lord this morning. Because what I found is that these are not just something that I just come up with. These are things that I actually experienced throughout the week. Excuses are why, not just the Sweden deal, but also in Orlando, or also just reaching our neighbor to our left and to our right. Whatever it is, we're called. And here's the surrender, guys. When we just cast our nets and we sow broadly, let God do the work. It's his anyways. It's his battle that we're surrendering to. Here's a couple of them. I'll rattle them off. Number one, feeling inadequate. Some of us don't want to run to the battle because we feel inadequate, but you know what Paul says? In my weakness, I'm strong. Actually, I love the fact that when others have said, because they know that, hey, every time I'm weak, this is brilliant. Every time I'm weak, I get to be strong on the battlefield. That's amazing. Only God can do that. Only he can do it. So, you know, feeling inadequate is just a form of pride. It's looking at yourself too much. And when we surrender to the battle, not in it, when we surrender to it, when we say, yes, I'm going to run and I am not going to look at myself, whether I'm a prophetic guy, I don't have that. Wow, look at that. Kristen Abbott just gave a word. Do you just know that all she did is hear God and deliver? It wasn't her word anyways. Yeah. Number two, we have a fear of family because we've been hurt. And this is the game changer in our culture. I've studied it. I came here to UCF. This is just a city. Everyone else can go to their city. But we came here. We just said, God, let us tap in. Let us tap into what's going on in this culture. If we could tap in, we know the giants of the day, then we could pick up rocks from the scriptures and throw at them. And we would win. But what are those things? What are the things that just trip us up? It's offense. It always has been for years. But specifically, so many of us have grown up in pain, especially us young guys. You know, we grew up in, young people, we grew up in a lot of pain. Maybe our mom and dad, they've never maybe been emotionally available. They've been not emotionally cared. Maybe you never grew up and your parents never sat with you and said, how are you? How are you doing? You know, we get bullied at school, or we get bad grades, or we're getting made fun of, whatever, and we come home. It's just as chaotic in the home that it was at school. There's no safe place to run to. Where do we run? We run to things outside of God and we find ourselves in trouble, right? But then God comes and he meets us where we're at. But here's the deal, what I know about that. He might meet us where we're at, but ultimately, sometimes when we're sitting there, we don't know what to do. He saved us, but I still have all this hurt and baggage. God's called us to let go of the baggage. And you know, when I was had a dream the other night, and I had this, it was very short. We're on mission, and I had this bag, and it was my blue bag that I carry around, and I had a bunch of stuff in there. I didn't know until after the dream what was in there, and it got stolen. It got left, sometimes for the guys, you have phone, wallet, keys. You're like the three taps. You know, okay, we're good. You leave a place, you're like, okay, everything's good. Glory to God, I can lose anything else. It was kind of one of those things where I just felt in the dream, I was like, you know what? Wait a second, I lost something. And he said, you know, the things in your bag were non-essentials. They were just the charger. You could always get another one of those. There's some clothes, some things, and you could always get that. But you know what? You have everything you need, John. Go on mission. You see, it's the same right now. A lot of us feel like, man, we're inadequate. We're fearful of family. We have all this offense. We have all this stuff. But if we got to let go of the baggage to run to the battle. We couldn't run in somebody else's armor. It'd be too clunky. We couldn't take our baggage with us. It'd weigh us down. See, ultimately, we're called to let go of those things so that he's using, you know, in the New Testament, take nothing but the word of God. Jesus was brilliant because he said, look, if you take all these other things, if people keep rejecting you, you have something to comfort you. It's not me. It's something else. And, you know, I want to share this story, kind of illustrate maybe how somebody feels here. When it was the other night when I was taking Ella, we were going to bed. I laid with her. And I just said, you know, she's my 7-year-old or 6-year-old. May she never be 7. 6-year-old. As I was laying there, I normally say goodnight and everything. Sometimes she wants me to stay, whatever. But she's real quiet. And man, I sensed in the spirit that something was off. And I said, are you okay? She's like, just a long pause. And she turns to me. She's like, I don't know why I'm so alone. I'm so alone. I feel so alone. I was like, what do you get? I mean, I didn't say anything. I was just like, oh, Jesus. And I grabbed her as hard as I could. I'm like, I'll tell you something. You may feel alone, but you're not alone. I am here with you. I love you. And I'm not leaving. And we could spend the whole night here. But I'm not leaving. And you know, ultimately, that's what God is saying to you. He'll never leave you nor forsake you. And some of you guys, and some of the people, young and old, have never had somebody, whether it's a parent or even heard the voice of God, and say, "You know what? Is he the same?" You know. And as I read Luke, it says that something like this. It says, "You know, when I have those moments, I'm like, man, that was a good dad." And you know, God says, "You know what? I'm a better dad." Because, you know, the only reason why you're able to do that and console your daughter is because I consoled you. Maybe you just need a dose of revelation again. And he is like that. Maybe it's a lack of vision or money. You know, money has become a new god or an old god. I mean, he's always been a god. He's always been creeping around, maybe when the right moment, right? He always kind of finds a way to get in there and scare you. Maybe if I give to Sweden and I go, what if I come back to nothing? Well, I have a story for that. Kathy, I remember walking around. We were just walking around our neighborhood. She started a church virtually with us. And I said, you know, if anybody in this church, there's one person I would love to send to Columbia, and it's you. But I realized the cost. I realized that you would have to lose your job in order to be in Columbia for 3 months. I know that is going to be really, really hard, but she knew it. She's like, I'm going to lose my job. I know it. It's worth it. Because I knew that God would take care of her. And as we were walking around, it was just a sober moment. We were walking, Nicole's on one side, I was on the other side, and she's in the middle. And we just had this walk around the block. We were reminiscing when we were in youth ministry. We were reminiscing when what God has done and all the great things that he's done. It was incredible. And we said, man, you are a daughter. You're made for this. We're behind you. Whatever it takes, God's going to move through you. He's going to use you, and he'll provide for you. You know that. But I said, ultimately, it's your choice, and it's not mine, because you got to count the cost. Everybody has to do that. Nobody's twisted in the battlefield. David wasn't twisted. He was invited. We're all invited to be a part of this thing. And you know what? She not only got, she had an okay job before, but now she's got a really good job now. It's just how God works. He's going to take care of you. It's who he is. Don't be fearful of money. Also, I just say this, number 5, is that there's also rebellion in our hearts. God wants to melt rebellion in our hearts. Sometimes we're like, man, we know better. We're prideful. We know how it works. We know our life. We have it all planned out. When you surrender, who knows what he's going to do? Maybe I don't want to be in Sweden. I want to be in Indonesia. I want to be in China. I want to be all over the place. Just do the next thing in front of you, and God will blow through you life that would reach the nations. You never know who you're going to reach in Sweden. Perhaps it would connect you to another part of the world. Perhaps you'll gain muscle as you go, and you'll gain faith, which you need to go to some of the crazier places. He's got it all under control if you surrender to him. Maybe you don't feel like family, and you just need to admit that. Maybe you're the problem. Not God or not the other person. Maybe you just need to surrender and say, look, I am the problem. I'm always aiming the arrows at other people, but today is a new day. How about we take the arrows together, you and me, and we aim it at the enemy? That's a new way to fight. You know what? You'll always have family when you both look at one another and say, we're not fighting one another, but we're fighting not against flesh and blood here, but against principalities, against the demonic work that wants to destroy you. So when we actually look, we're saying, come on, church. We're family. We're better together than apart. But when we can aim that arrow at the enemy, I'm telling you, God's going to bless our church. He's going to move us together in ways that we never have dreamed of and never thought we'd ever do. And that's ultimately what I see in this generation. Something doesn't go our way, we're out, it's their fault. How about you just be the bigger guy, you know, the more humble person, come inside and say, maybe it's me. Maybe I got some root issues that I need to deal with. You know, I'm sorry for offending you. I'm sorry for doing that. I want to get this thing right. And I want to take your arrow and my arrow and we'll aim it at the enemy because no weapon formed against me shall prosper. We'll hide in the shadow of his wings. And when we're in his wings, we get his spirit, we get his wisdom, and we get his power. And the last one, perhaps it's just selfishness in us. The baggage of selfishness. We just still want the comfortable life. We're building our own kingdom. We're in church, but we are still building our own kingdom. That doesn't work. When we come in, we're saying, God, just have your way in us. I want to stand before Jesus. In fact, here, let me say it this way. I want Jesus to come into our church. If he was here in the flesh and he was walking and you're asking him and you're talking with him, I want him to say, there is something genuine here. Because aren't we all here to please God, not one another, and not any, we're not here to please anybody else. We're here to please Jesus. And we want him to come and I want him to speak well of us as a people. I want him to say, man, you guys have put me in the center. You know, these are, when he speaks of Antioch or Orlando, he's saying, Antioch or Orlando is a people that put me first. Antioch, Orlando is a people that love one another passionately. They really do lay their lives down for one another. They really do family together. It's amazing. They throw the baggage of sin away. They throw the baggage of apathy. They say, I don't want to be like anybody else. I don't want to be like the culture of our day. I don't want to be like that. They want to be like me. They want to be like Jesus. That's powerful. That's my dream. That's what I see. That's what I want. It's so bad. I want that. I want Jesus to speak well and say, well done, guys. Well done, my good and faithful servants. You did it. You surrendered well in the battle. You surrendered well. You ran. You did it. You threw the baggage away. You're free. You conquered Goliath. You reached the nations. Well done.